So I've noticed a trend after years of working with people going through life transitions that we go through a ton of identity shifts as the years go by, and we're asked to reinvent ourselves, it seems like, or at least to go through these transitions and life stages in a way that might sometimes feel impossible. Welcome to I Wonder, Getting Curious with Dr. Christy Rootsking. Ever feel lost in life's maze? Do you wonder how to heal from the past or raise awesome kids or build rock solid relationships? Well, I'm Dr. Christy. I'm a licensed trauma therapist and a former educator, and I am here to help you navigate these questions and more on I Wonder. Join us each episode as we delve into powerful strategies for overcoming life's challenges, fostering healthy communication, and embracing personal growth. Maybe you're dealing with past trauma. Maybe you're navigating a divorce or considering a career switch, or simply parenting a sensitive child. Whatever it is, you are not alone. So join me and let's get curious together. In this episode, here's what we're going to do. We're going to figure out what I wonder the most, which is there a way to embrace each stage of our lives without feeling the need to either go back to where we were before or freak out about what's next because we're not exactly sure? Is there a way to weather these stages so that we feel whole as we go through them? How do we keep from being overwhelmed by anxiety or burned out with each stage? And can we figure out our own identity and keep it through every transition and hold firm in a world that seems to be spinning faster and faster around us? Let's find out. I always like to start with a story. Years ago, when my oldest was finishing up grammar school, so like 7th or 8th grade, my husband took a job at a new city, really a whole new state. We did have some time to prepare for it. So even though it was giant, I feel like we did a pretty good job learning from our past move with 3 kids and trying to incorporate some of the things we wish we had done the first time this time. It meant that we took time to mourn what we were going to lose. We took time to celebrate some of the things that would come from this change, or at least try to look forward to some of the things that would come from this change. We also took into consideration the feelings of everyone, and there were a lot of feelings. We shopped for houses together. We explored neighborhoods. We looked at schools. We tried to put ourselves in the new place. We also talked a lot to our kids about what they were going to miss and what they were looking forward to, what their roles were in this move, and also what we could do for them and what we couldn't do for them. We were honest. We were honest about our own mixed emotions, and we were honest about how we were going through this with them. We also tried not to focus all of our time and energy on the change, on the move, on the newness, on the loss. Instead, we tried to at least spend some of our time enjoying what was right in front of us. The neighborhood we already had, the place we'd already moved to and loved with all our hearts. We try to enjoy our day-to-day time together and build that family unit so that we were solid wherever we landed. In other words, I really thought we did it right. You know, it wasn't easy and there were lots of feelings, but overall, it really seemed like we had a handle on it and we were going to come through it okay. Then, and this is where the story gets good, almost overnight, not almost, literally overnight, in the span of a morning meeting, everything changed. We weren't moving. We weren't going anywhere. The job wasn't changing. That's a story for another time. But just know that everything we had planned, the neighborhoods we picked out, the schools we were looking at, how we were going to do it, when we were going to do it, we told everybody, all those things that we'd done, poof, gone in the course of a day. We're going to talk a little bit later in the podcast about the 4 types of transitions, but just know that in this time of our lives, when we were going through all of this, not only did we have almost all 4 types of transitions in the first part of it, but we went through an entire cycle of change in at lightning speed. It all happened in the blink of an eye, and we got a little bit of whiplash as a result. It was actually then that Reinvention Girl was born. Reinvention Girl was my blog persona and my brand when I was a health coach and a blogger writing every day about the daily trials and celebrations of parenting. She came about because in that moment, I realized my superpower might be weathering change. I'd had a lot of it in my life. And even though I wasn't fully aware of it in the moment. Looking back, it realized I got through things fairly well unscathed. And so Reinvention Girl was born. It seemed a good time to embrace that part of myself and a good time to share what I knew with the world. The one thing that was constant in my life and probably everybody else's is change. And so when I recognized that my ability to handle that was good, seemed like a good thing to brand myself at the time. I mentioned earlier in the story, there are four types of transition or change. I don't know exactly who decided these. It seems to show up in organizational psychology, you know, businesses and companies and when they're going through mergers and changes and things. And it's often the stages of it are often attributed to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, but we'll get to that in a minute. But these four types, anticipated, unanticipated, non-event change, and sleeper change, my personal favorite, are ways to sort of categorize the transitions we go through. Anticipated is just what you think, aging, changing schools, maybe even changing jobs as we move up the ladder, our children growing. Those are all anticipated changes. They're things that we know happen as a result of life moving on. Unanticipated changes are things that usually include loss, job loss, relationship loss, death of somebody we love, a friendship that doesn't last the way we think, breakups. Anything that's not anticipated can not only be a change, but can include grief as well. And it can fall into the category of unanticipated change. Non-event changes means something that didn't happen in your life that you were expecting to happen. You don't get married, or maybe you do get married. You don't have kids, or maybe you do have kids. You choose a different career path, or you end up on a different career path than you once thought you might. Those are the non-event types of transitions that we go to and changes that we face all through our lives. And my personal favorite, the sleeper. And I love this because it means something that snuck up on you. And when I see people in my office, a lot of times it is as a result of those types of transitions that something feels like it's happening to you instead of with you or with your consent. It is a change like a pandemic and all that comes with that. It's a change from your children aging. And I know I already said those are part of the anticipated changes, but the part of the children aging that you go through is often unanticipated and sneaks up on us whether we want it to or not. We don't expect what's going to happen to us. And so sometimes anticipated changes can involve a sleeper component as well. There are stages that we all go through, and this is the part that's often attributed to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who you might recognize as the person who came up with the stages of grief. The stages of change aren't dissimilar. There's shock and denial. There's anger and fear, or anger or fear. There's the acceptance stage, and then there's the commitment phase, which is the part where you decide, all right, this is happening. I'm going to get on board. They're often attributed to her because they feel like the same stages of grief. And much like that model of grief, the stages of change aren't linear. And they aren't necessarily the same for every person. And they certainly aren't the same depending on the type of change that it is in our lives. If it falls into one of those anticipated or, you know, categories where we have time, you might go through all four of those. If it's a sleeper change or an unanticipated change, you might be all over the place with how you're feeling and how you're handling it. In motivational interviewing, which is a type of intervention that psychologists use when people are going through a transition, often in recovery, in addiction recovery circles, motivational interviewing is used. And there are stages or there's a cycle within that as well when we talk about change. And I really like to apply it to a lot of things because I feel like we all kind of go through this at times. It starts with pre-contemplation, which means a phase of change where you're not anticipating, or sorry, you're not even planning on a change. You don't necessarily see that there's any reason to. And so you're not even contemplating it. And then, of course, it goes to contemplation and then moves through to acting on the change, maintaining the change, much like the commitment part and the action part from the other phases. Motivational interviewing includes those acting and maintaining. Interestingly, it also includes a cycle for relapse. And obviously that fits in an addiction recovery place, but really it applies to all of us in our lives. First of all, it's a reminder that change that lasts takes a real commitment. But also it's a reminder that we're human. And even if we commit, even if we maintain, even if we do all the things, sometimes we might fall back into old patterns or old ways of doing it. Or like I talked about at the very top of the podcast, we might fall back into thinking we need to go back. Oh, here I am now and I don't like it and it's uncomfortable. Let me try to get back to what I was before. I think of new parenthood or even new relationships when you're, you know, officially moved in together or officially married. There might be a space and time where you go, I should go back to the way I was before. I don't like who I am right now. Let me try to get back to it. My sort of athletic journey that I'll get to another time, I remember very distinctly being in college and not having like a team to be on because I wasn't good enough for college sports, but I was an athlete all through my young schooling. And I didn't know who to be in college. I thought, well, I was an athlete up until now, but I don't have teams to be on. And these girls that are just going to the gym for the fun of it, those don't feel like me either. And so who am I in this category? I don't know who I am now. I know who I was. How do I get back to her? So that's almost a little bit of a relapse because I wasn't really transitioning into the new version of me in college. I was trying to get back to the girl from high school who, you know, played on four different sports in four different seasons. It's not necessarily a relapse, but it's that same concept of I have committed to this, but also I don't really like it that much. So I'm going to try to go back to what I was doing before. This last part, how easy it is for us to sort of fall back into patterns or want to go back into patterns, it might explain why all transition means we're not so great at it. So if you think about transitions in those four categories, it might be obvious for unplanned or non-event types, the ones where something's expected and it doesn't happen, or you're not expecting it and it does happen. It might be obvious why we get overwhelmed by those, because it's hard to handle change. It's extra hard to handle change when it's unexpected. And these changes also include grief. They also do. These changes also include grief. So even if there isn't a human loss, we have usually lost something. For me, that college transition, I lost team. I didn't know how to find that spirit and that camaraderie that I had with team when I didn't play on anything anymore. So no one died. I didn't lose anybody, but I did lose a piece of what I thought made me me. And I wasn't sure how to get back to it. When things involve grief, we, at least in this country, are really bad at it. I wonder, though, those are obvious, but why are these other transitions hard, even if we know they're coming, or even if we think we have a plan in place, like I did all those years ago? So I think we should first just call out the fact that there's safety in predictability. We feel comfortable when we know what's going on. Even if what's going on isn't great, we feel comfortable. So going back to that pre-contemplation phase, a lot of us are often in the pre-contemplation phase of change, even when it's obvious to everybody else we need to make a change. We feel most comfortable in this predictable thing that we know. So even when we know change is coming, we may not be able to plan for every piece of it, and that can feel really unsettling and unsafe. The anxiety that comes from the unknown makes us feel unsafe. So sometimes we don't even realize we're in a time of transition until it has overwhelmed us. And also, let's go back to grief. Change often brings about unexpected grief, and that can get really complicated. When it is an obvious loss, meaning no one died, we can get confused by feelings of grief. And so we often then add guilt and shame on top of those. For instance, if you lose a job, or even if you decide to quit a job, that can be really confusing because it's a job. And so you're not understanding why you're grieving it or why you're feeling these feelings of overwhelm and sadness. You might not even be able to identify them as grief. It might just feel overwhelming and sad, and you're not exactly sure why. And the obvious answer is, well, I lost my job. That's why. But you may, when you parse it out, be like, it doesn't feel like that thing is as big as the feelings that I'm having right now. So we get confused. And then usually what happens when we get confused is we get angry at ourselves, or we get frustrated with ourselves, or we think we're not supposed to feel that way. And so then we feel guilty and shameful about that. And we maybe don't share with anybody when that happens. And so we're feeling sad, then we're feeling guilty about feeling sad, and then we're feeling alone because we haven't shared with anybody that we're feeling sad because we feel bad about feeling sad. It sounds a little loopy when I say it, but I would imagine everybody watching or listening can think of a time where they have been in exactly that boat. For some reason, we all think we should be able to handle things without being so sad. Remember that thing I said about Americans being bad at grief? This is what I'm talking about. Finally, in all of this, there's the identity piece that I talked about at the very top of the show. I talked about having people having to, or at least feeling like they have to, reinvent themselves throughout life. I mean, I created an entire persona around it. We feel like we need to change and reinvent who we are rather than just accept that as life changes and we go through different seasons, so too might we change in them. Maybe our expectations that we'll suddenly be a new person as life marches on are unfair. Maybe instead, we should take some time to know who we are so that through our lives, ages, and stages, we can move through with a solid base. I talked about in our story, making room for everybody's feelings. And if you're watching right now, you're seeing me make a face when I say that, because that is a really hard thing to do as a parent. Not only are you feeling stuff, but you're also trying to navigate all the feelings of the people involved. And that's not easy in any situation. The key, though, to being able to weather these changes might just be making room for feelings and accepting them, no matter what they are. If we took the time to examine our own expectations, not just what they are for any given situation, but why we have them. And then when we're in those situations, we may feel less guilt for whatever it is that we're feeling. If we didn't get the thing we thought we were going to get and we know that we were expecting it, well, then it's much easier to accept that we're sad about not getting it, right? If something happens to us that is not at all in line with who we thought we were and we're not really sure how to get through it, won't we be able to give ourselves a little bit more grace that that doesn't feel very comfortable? If we were, imagine for a second, how much less guilt and shame would come from this type of acceptance. Rather than trying to judge our every move, rather than trying to shut down any feelings we have, because we aren't supposed to feel, imagine if we just accepted what was coming with grace and self-compassion. Imagine if we were staying curious before judgmental. If we knew a transition was coming and we started to ask those same questions I talked about asking. What are we looking forward to? What are we going to miss? How are we going to feel when we get there? What will we want to come back to? How do we want it to look? If we got curious about the changes, instead of either shutting our eyes to them or pushing them off or just trying not to feel anything. If we got curious about not only our expectations, but how we feel about the things, imagine how much more self-compassion we could have in those moments. It's also a deeper understanding of who we are and what our values are and how we can align with those values in each stage. And that alignment is what gives us the freedom to accept the feelings, because we know that nothing lasts forever. Obviously, we're in the middle of some big change or life transition. Our feelings can't be the only thing that lasts forever. Instead of judging our reactions, imagine if we asked ourselves how I expected to feel in this situation, or how might I have expected to feel in this situation? Why don't I? And is there anything I can do about it? See the difference there between the curiosity and the judgment? Instead of saying, I wish this wasn't happening, or I hate that this is happening, and now I hate that I hate that this is happening, we say, this stinks. I wonder why. Let me ask. Let me figure it out. Let me look inside. Tune in to see what I'm feeling and if I can do anything to change it. In asking the questions, we allow room for whatever comes up, the grief, the frustration, even maybe the joy. It's okay to have all the feelings. We can be patient with ourselves and know that we're going to get through it, because nothing lasts forever. When change is unexpected and it feels like it happened to you, not with you, take the time to examine your values in that moment and see if you can recalibrate. Believe it or not, transitions, changes, life stages provide an opportunity for growth and self-discovery. See aforementioned reinvention girl superpowers. When I didn't move and I had set up my whole expectation for who I was going to be and how we were going to do it in this new place, when that didn't happen, I could have shut down. I could have been angry at the world. I could have sat in, you know, overwhelm. And please trust me, there was a time for that. I was sad and angry at the world and trying my best to figure out if I even wanted to fight for this thing or if I was going to take it as a gift that we didn't have to do it at all. At that point, I didn't really know. I was confused because I had just spent all this time trying to shift my mindset to here's where we're going and here's what our expectations are for the future so that I could start to embrace that change. And then when that opportunity was taken away, I wasn't even sure how I felt. And I could have been mad at myself for that. I could have been frustrated with myself for that, that I wasn't just right on the ball moving on to the next thing. And honestly, I probably was for a few days, but I didn't last there long because I knew who I was. I knew what was important to me. I knew that the five of us was really the only thing that mattered. And we would be okay no matter where we landed, even if it was right exactly where we were. I made room for the feelings, mine, theirs, the neighbors, the future neighbors that never were. We did know some people where we were going, and they were pretty upset that we weren't coming. My husband, who had just gone through this major thing that was even bigger than our family. I made room for all of that. I had some grace for all of that. And again, not every day, not every moment. I'm sure it was not my best time. And if you asked any of my children, neighbors, friends, family, anything. But largely speaking, we weathered it because we accepted what came up and what we were feeling in the moment. And we knew ourselves well enough to know where we wanted to be and what we could control in order to get there. Don't be afraid to ask for support. And remember that you need to take care of yourself. Part of the reason that move worked and wasn't totally overwhelming for me was because at the very beginning, I set firm boundaries about what I and my children were going to need for this to work best. We weren't leaving in the middle of a school year. We weren't leaving when one of them was about to graduate eighth grade. We also didn't really want to be living apart for a very long time, so we had to look at compromises there. I know we didn't end up moving, but we really set ourselves up so that if we had, things would have been okay. And that was partially because I was willing to stand up for what we needed. I learned it from the last move, from what we didn't have. And so I knew I had to put it in place the next time. So that self-care, that looking out for me, ensuring that what I needed and what my kids needed and what our family valued was in line with our behavior and what we were doing and planning. Not all of our expectations were met. Not all of our values were aligned. But for the most part, we had a solid base. So it could weather those changes and stages, including when they told us nothing was happening. Boundaries, self-care, asking for support, all of those things come from knowing yourself, your expectations, and what you need. We get there by practicing mindfulness and radical self-acceptance so that we are continually checking in with ourselves to not only stand firm in who we are, but to be awake in the here and now instead of numb or afraid. Or trying to get back to the past that we've moved on from. So if you can set that up for yourself, it doesn't have to be 50 minutes of heavy meditation. It just has to be a daily check-in, a daily reminder of who you are, some curiosity about who you are. What are your values? What do you want to align with? Not just you, but you as whoever else is involved in the change. Is it children? Is it a partner? Is it a boss? Is it a team at work? Who's involved in the change? What are everybody's needs and how can you meet them or let them down easy when you can't? Be realistic about those expectations. You have to know them first in order to be realistic about them. So here's what I know. Transitions are hard, even when we know they're coming, and they can knock you out when we don't know they're coming or when they sneak up on you. A daily mindfulness practice that invites an awareness and allows us to understand our values, allows us to know our strengths, allows us to know the areas where we need support. Also allows us to live in alignment with all of those things. And that makes feeling our way through transitions doable. Knowing yourself, knowing your strengths, knowing what you need, and knowing you can always ask for support in order to get it. That will allow you to weather any storm. So stay curious, stay compassionate with yourself, and know that you are loved. Change is coming, but we got this. Hey, and welcome back to the Me Time segment of the podcast. So I wanted to call this segment self-care segment, but I chose not to because I kind of hate the phrase self-care. So when you think of Me Time, think of it as all the tips and tricks and products and things that I have to recommend in order for you to take care of yourself. They're things I love for taking care of me. So that gets us to this episode, which is not a specific thing or product or book or movie or any of those things. It's really just a thing that I noticed happened to me at my age and stage of life. And I thought maybe it would be helpful to anybody else listening who might be in the same transition as me. So I recently joined a gym, although that doesn't seem like the right word for it. It is a massive health club slash wellness center slash country club. I don't know what. If you live near a Lifetime Fitness, that's what it is. So you know what that is. If you don't live near a Lifetime Fitness, then think of like an Equinox or I can't even think of anything else like this. When I lived in Maryland, there was a place called the Big Vanilla that was just this giant white building that had a lot of these same things. So it's not just a gym in that there are everything a gym has. And then some. There's also like a full set of pickleball courts. There are three pools. There's a cafe with healthy food and smoothies that I'm currently nursing an addiction to. Yeah, there's this plunge pool. There's a hot tub. Like there's anything you could want to take care of yourself. I believe there's a chiropractor on staff. You can get like stretching appointments and you can sit in a cryogenic chair. And like, there's just... I'm not saying all these things to like boast. I'm telling you all these things to paint a picture for you that this is like a total wellness community and also potentially ripe with gym bros, which is part of why I'm talking about it today. Because traditionally speaking, I have been a little bit not a gym person because every time I try to join one, I inevitably end up in like the corner of the room with all the guys lifting like 450 pounds. And, you know, grunting and just or next to the women in the like size zero Lululemon pants and just feeling bad about myself at every turn, including when I was 100% fit and trim and athletic looking and had every reason to be there. The reason I tell you all this is to tell you that a few years ago when I was in the throes of being so sick, I could barely get off the couch to go to work. I gained a ton of weight. I didn't even recognize my body anymore. I was not happy in any way. And I was driving past where this gym now exists. It was being built. And so I said to myself in my head at that moment, it was literally a pile of dust on the ground. But there was a sign that said coming in spring of 2024. I said, ooh, I recognize that. I have friends in Maryland that belong to a Lifetime and it always seems so amazing to me. It seems like her like social life is there. I'm going to join that. Like I'm making a commitment to myself that when that place opens up, I'm going to join it and I'm going to use it. And I'm not going to care that I'm 1,000,000 pounds overweight and haven't been in a fitness class in 4 years. And lo and behold, spring of 2024 came around and I was like, uh-oh, I said that I was going to do that. Now, a lot has changed. I had a surgery that alleviated much of the physical problems I was going through. Not all of them, but many of them. Enough so that I had some energy and some life back in me and was ready to sort of get there. And as many of you know, because you listen to this podcast regularly, I turned 50 a few months ago and sort of lost all, not all, most. I'll be honest, I still have days. But I lost most of my cares, meaning I no longer cared about the size zero Lululemon girls, and I no longer cared about the gym bros, and I no longer cared if anybody thought I did or didn't belong in a gym. I really finally, for the first time in 50 years, probably experienced that, like, I have no Fs to give. I want to do this thing, and I'm going to do this thing, and I don't care about anybody else. As it turns out, maybe it's my attitude or maybe it's just this place, but as it turns out, it is a lovely place and I haven't had to worry about that. I've been corrected one time by a dude, but actually he wasn't wrong. So it was okay that he told me what to do with the weights. But for the most part, everybody's just there to work out. There's definitely people trying to pick people up, but I'm not in their demographic, so they leave me alone. There's enough equipment for everybody. There's enough space for everybody. There's enough rooms. There's enough classes for everybody. So nobody cares that I'm there. Nobody even notices I'm there. And I'm free to move about the place as much as I want. And I feel allowed to be there, which is the first time in my entire life I have belonged to a health club and I feel like I should be there or can be there. And again, maybe that's a function of my age. The reason I'm telling you all of this in this segment is not so that you run out and join a Lifetime gym or any gym for that matter. I'm telling you what I have learned about being back in this place, and it has to do with the transitions. So I think I mentioned before, I mentioned it a lot, so I probably mentioned it before, that I in high school or, you know, from like birth basically through high school was an athlete, four sport athlete, decent. You know, it was back in the day when you didn't have to specialize quite like you do now and you didn't have to, you know, be a Caitlin Clark in order to play basketball. Like, you had to have some athletic ability and a commitment to a team. And that's what I had. And so I did well. Our teams did fairly well. Some of them stunk. But anyway, I got to college. I didn't know what to do with myself because I had no teams to join. I wasn't good enough to play at a Division I school. And I had no desire to play at some of the colleges that did actually express an interest in me. I just didn't want to play college sports. I was not that committed to any one sport in order to play college sports. What I liked was teams and sports. So fast forward to college and beyond, where I have had a lifelong struggle with physical fitness because I just don't like anything, or I haven't liked anything for long. I ran a marathon, but that was begrudgingly. Somebody else kind of roped me into that. And then I had a time in my life where I was pretty committed to spin class and yoga at the same time. Like, I would go literally from one to the other. And I was committed to it and I loved it, but it was not sustainable because I wasn't working at the time. And so I literally just had time to, I mean, I was in school, but for the most part, I could go to class whenever and I could, you know, do two in a row and a bunch of other stuff that for a normal human is not doable. So all this to say, when I joined this place, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do because I've spent my whole life not really being a person who likes working out. And so therefore I didn't know what to do. I thought, okay, I'll sign up for a spin class maybe, but I'm wildly out of shape. So I'm kind of intimidated to go to the spin class right away. Okay, let me get to my point. I joined this place. I hired a trainer. I also signed up for Reformer Pilates because way back in the day when I had babies, I went back to, nope, sorry, that's a lie. Right after I got married, I went to a gym that had a floor Pilates class, and it was the first thing I had found since I was a high school athlete that I felt like challenged by. Mind you, I was training for a marathon at the time, but this floor Pilates class, it was like so predictable. So you noticed a change in your body fairly quickly, and I felt like it was really hard, but I could do it. And so I've been watching people on the Reformer for a long time and just not being committed to going, A, because the surgery that I had was abdominal surgery. So I literally have zero core strength. And I'm not just saying that to be self-deprecating. I'm being that to tell you the absolute truth. I can barely sit up from a laying down position. Actually, I can't sit up from a laying down position. I need to use my arms. So Pilates seemed like a silly thing to do, but also something that I was like, I think I really need. So I joined a Pilates Reformer class. I used a trainer to help me just sort of navigate the gym for a little while. I won't work with her forever, but I really like working with her because she's really good at doing what she does. And she knows my body and she knows my capabilities and my non-capabilities. And so she's been showing me around the place and helping me get comfortable there. And I say all this to tell you, the me time part of this, the recommendation part of this is like, find a thing that feels good. So, you know, I talked about one time being addicted to spin class and yoga, and I never loved it. I liked the instructor for my spin class. I loved the instructors, there was two in my yoga classes. But when left to my own devices, I don't think I would have chosen either one. And so now I have found things that don't hurt my body. I am 50. I can't do the same types of super high impact cardio that I once could do and not limp around for 6 weeks afterward. So the point of this is, find things that feel good, that you enjoy, and that bring you a sense of yourself back. In addition to the Pilates class and the trainer, I have played some pickleball. I finally succumbed. I feel like it's a rite of passage. On your 50th birthday, they hand you pickleball paddles. But the thing that it gave me was exactly the thing I've been missing since high school, which is that team competitive sport activity. It's not, I'm not getting super fit. I'm not going to go on the tour. It's none of that, but it's just an outlet for the athlete part of me that has been dormant since she was 18, because I've never been, except for a couple fraternity functions where we had to do, you know, like tug of war or something. I haven't been on a team since I was 18 years old. And so playing something where you're keeping score and where, I mean, we play with this couple where the guy is super good because he was a tennis player. And so he just, they're beginners too, but he is not a beginner in any way, shape or form. And I really love playing with them because it makes me play better. I have also hurt myself, so I haven't played in a while. But the whole point of this section was supposed to be not me waxing romantic about pickleball, but really just to tell you to find the ultimate form of self-care is to find the thing that makes you happy and do it. And if it's pickleball, great. If it's running, great. If that makes you happy, great. If it's, you know, going for a walk with the dog by the lake, then great. Or if it's a class at home that's like Zumba or jazz dance or something that like you probably would never do in public, but you just found a video and you love it and it makes you feel so good, do it as much as you can. I think sometimes we get caught up in what am I supposed to be doing? Or at this stage in my life, how am I supposed to be doing it? Or what would a person here? We talked about reinvention this whole episode. Like, what would a person here be doing? Who cares? What would you like to be doing right now? Find it and do it. And maybe I'll see you at the gym. All right. Till next time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us on I Wonder, Getting Curious with Dr. Christy Ritz-King. Don't forget to subscribe for more episodes and leave us a review to share your thoughts. We'll see you next time. Until then, stay curious.